Ladies, welcome to our Bible study segment. We are in the book of Esther. Now here's our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert.
Thanks, Amy. It's really good to be here today. Well, we're going to jump back in to the book of Esther today, and we're going to see the plot thickens. Yesterday we saw where Mordecai foiled a plot that was against the life of Ahasuerus, the king. And today we're going to see a little bit more detail into what the big conflict is going to be in this book. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to Esther. We're going to be in chapter 3. We're going to read verses 1 through 6 today. After all these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, and advanced him and set his throne above all the officials who were with him. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" And when they spoke to him day after day, he would not listen to them. They told Haman in order to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So, as they had made known to him the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. Okay, so after these events was actually like 4 to 5 years later, Mordecai, who saved the king's life, is still where he was, and Haman has been promoted. The king even commanded that people kneel down to honor Haman in his new position, but Mordecai wouldn't do it. Now, first of all, kneeling before people in authority wasn't necessarily a bad thing, even for God's chosen people. There are examples of Israelites bowing down to kings and to others in authority from the very beginning. I'm going to just list a couple of references that you can go and dig into later. 1 Samuel chapter 24, verse 8, 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 4, 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 16, Genesis chapter 23, verse 7, Genesis chapter 33, verse 3, and Genesis 44, verse 14. There's all of those that come before this that demonstrate that kneeling and showing honor and respect for the person and for the position, that was not a sin. So Mordecai, we know he's a Jew, and we know he loves and trusts God. So we have to understand that he's not refusing to bow down because Haman has been placed in authority over him. There's got to be something else going on there. Well, Haman's ancestry and Mordecai's ancestry play a big part here. While we don't know with 100% certainty that Haman was descended from the Amalekites, whose king was called the Agag, and thus the Agagites, it makes sense that he was a part of these people. So why does that matter? Well, the Amalekites were descendants of Esau, kith and kin with the Edomites. God will send the prophet Obadiah to tell of the destruction that he's going to send on the Edomites. So the peoples that descended from Esau, they're not going to end well. As far back as Exodus chapter 17, verse 14, it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Write this as a memorial in a book and recite it in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven.' And Moses built an altar and called the name of it, 'The Lord is my banner,' saying, 'A hand upon the throne of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation.'" But in 1 Samuel chapter 15, we see that God commanded Saul, the first king of Israel, to utterly destroy the Amalekites. And when God says that, he means utterly destroy. He means leave no one left standing. Nothing is to be left alive. Not kill all the men that you fight against. He told them directly, you go into the and take out the women and children and old men too. But Saul didn't obey. He destroyed most of the Amalekites, but he let the king and the best of the livestock live. As a result, God sends Samuel to tell Saul that Saul's line will not be the royal line in Israel. His decision here lost Saul the crown. That was the final straw. If Saul had done his job, though, Haman wouldn't be alive, most likely. He wouldn't have been a problem. But there is this animosity that has been building up between the Jews and the Amalekites since practically forever. So Mordecai's refusal to bow down had more to do with who he would be bowing down to than just, "I don't bow before anybody but God." It was more, "I won't pay respect to an enemy of God." Thus, Mordecai flat out refused. Now, the officials call Mordecai on this, and he still refuses to obey, and they are more than willing to get him in trouble by tattling on him to Haman. Mordecai appears to have given as his reason for refusing to bow before Haman, "I'm a Jew." That was his reason. That was enough to him. That meant that he wouldn't honor someone who was against God in such a way. When Haman sees that indeed Mordecai won't pay honor to him, he's less than pleased. But when he learns that Mordecai is a Jew, he sees an opportunity to destroy more than just Mordecai. He sees an opportunity to use this to get rid of all the Jews. Nice guy, huh? Now, this section sets the stage for the main conflict of the Book of Esther, the conflict to which the Jews required a rescue. Still, as I ponder this, my brain latched onto the idea of Mordecai's refusal to bow and whether that was a sin or not. And recently, I heard a speaker talking on a related topic, and here's what stuck with me. Everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. That's from 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23. God convicts us all through the Holy Spirit of the sin that's in our lives. Often the behavior may not be the problem, but the heart motive is a real problem. For example, I know someone who, years ago, gave away all of her CDs and music of every sort, including, like, sheet music, and let me tell you, she had quite the collection. She gave them away because, for her, music was becoming an idol that was coming in front of God. So, to break that stronghold, to draw nearer to Him and rely on Him for her comfort and strength instead of her music, she removed the idol literally from her life. And she gave them away, by the way, instead of selling them, because she didn't want to profit off of that idol. Now, was what she listened to sinful? No. In fact, most of what she listened to, a lot of it was Christian music. Are CDs sinful? No. However, for her, they were causing a huge problem in her walk with God. Now, I'm happy to say that about 3 years after that, she was able to slowly start reintegrating music back into her life, and that is no longer an area that she struggles in, which is good because she's an amazing pianist and she can sing too. But music is now a part of her life, but it's no longer the focus of her life. In the New Testament, in Ephesians, Paul talks about slaves submitting to their masters as to the Lord. Paul also talks about submitting to the governing authorities because God has placed them there. Now, a line is drawn when they ask you to do something that is sinful, but we are to show respect to those in authority, knowing that God put them there, even when we don't agree with them. Think about David and Saul. David went to great lengths to avoid killing Saul. Why? It wasn't because Saul was such a scary guy. David wasn't scared of Saul. In fact, David had multiple opportunities to rid himself of Saul. But David was afraid of God and would not raise his hand against the anointed one of God. Period. Even when Saul tried to kill David over and over, David protected himself, but he also stayed away from Saul so that he wouldn't be the cause of Saul's death. He let God handle that. Mordecai isn't going to try to kill Haman, but he isn't going to assume a posture of submission to this man. This wasn't just civil honor that was being asked, because the Jews never refused to give that, even for evil kings. We see in the reason that Mordecai gives, that I'm a Jew, that this bowing was more than just honoring the leader. Mordecai simply states, I'm a Jew. The understanding there was that as a Jew, he would only worship God. So whatever was the actual command here to bow before Haman, there was a worship aspect to it that Mordecai wouldn't do. So for Mordecai, he was convicted that bowing before this man, this enemy of God, was a sin and something he could not do without damaging his relationship with God. His priorities were clear and God was first. There was nothing before God in Mordecai's life. Well, this leads me to my question for us today. What might come before God in your life? Think about it seriously. Here on Naomi's Table, we've done a program, Nancy and Amy discussed a program once talking about social media and how addictive the computer and those kinds of things can be. Is that something that comes before God in your life? Can you unplug for 3 days without feeling withdrawal? I'm totally serious, by the way. I know people who can't. You take away their internet access and they go crazy. What about TV? What about books? What about And hold on to your seat here. What about serving others? We've talked about this at Naomi's table too. I know I've heard Nancy talk about this. I've known people who made serving others into an idol to the point that they had convinced themselves that they were serving God and doing His work when their main responsibilities at home were being neglected to the point of disaster in their family relationships. Anything that comes between you and God's plan for your life can be an idol. Anything, even good things. So take some time today and think honestly about what you can't live without. What are you bowing before that you shouldn't be? Ask God to show you if it's time for you to give some of those things up. Maybe it's time to give something away completely. Then maybe it's time to just find a box and put something there and push it away until you know that you can reintegrate that back into your life without it becoming the focus. But see what happens in your life when you obey God's prompting to remove the obstacles that are keeping you from seeing Him.
Well, thank you, Beth. And ladies, that lesson that you just heard is available in a 10-minute audio segment on our website today, along with the individual study guide for today. And look for it at naomistable.com under the Bible Study tab. You can use these as a study for yourself or to teach women around your own table. Nancy and I will be back to talk more about today's lesson in just a moment.